Chapter 21. This is a change in human conditions that has been a very distinctive event in the history of the past century, and it is still in progress. But I think there is excellent reason for supposing that for practical purposes this change, made by the railway and the motor, this development of local locomotion, will reach a definite limit in the next 100 years. We are witnessing the completion of a great development that has altered the average possible suburban journey in an hour from 1 of 4 or 5 miles to 1 of 30 miles, and I doubt very much whether, when every tendency of expansion has been reckoned with, this average hour journey will ever get much beyond 60 or 70 miles an hour. A radius of 4 or 5 miles marked the maximum size of the old community. A radius of 100 miles will certainly mark the maximum of the new community. And so it is no effectual answer to my general argument to say that a revision of administrative areas always has been, and always will be, a public necessity. To a certain extent, that always has been, and always will be true, but on a scale in no way comparable to the scale on which it is true today, because of these particular inventions. This need in its greatness is a peculiar feature of the present time, and a peculiar problem of the present time. The municipal areas that were convenient in the Babylonian, ancient Egyptian, or Roman empires were no larger and no smaller than those that served the purpose of 17th century Europe, and I believe it is highly probable, I think the odds are in favor of the belief, that the most convenient administrative areas of the year 2000 will be no larger and no smaller than those for many subsequent centuries. We are, in this respect, in the full flow of a great and permanent transition. And the social and political aspect of the change is this steadily increasing proportion of people, more especially in our suburban areas, who are, so far as our old divisions go, delocalized. They represent, in fact, a community of a new sort, the new great modern community, which is seeking to establish itself in the room of the dwindling, little, highly localized communities of the past. Now, what are the practical consequences of this large and increasing non-local element in your old local government areas? First, there is this. The non-local people do not follow, have neither the time, nor the freedom, nor the stimulus of sufficient interests to follow, local politics. They are a sort of outlanders. Local politics remain therefore more and more in the hands of the dwindling section of people whose interests really are circumscribed by the locality. These are usually the small local tradesmen, the local building trade, sometimes a doctor and always a solicitor, and the most energetic and active and capable of these, and the one with the keenest eye to business, is usually the solicitor. Whatever you put into the hands of a local authority, education, lighting, communications, you necessarily put into the hands of a group of this sort. Here and there, of course, there may be variations. An organized labor vote may send in a representative, or some gentleman of leisure and philanthropic tastes, like Mr. Bernard Shaw, may confer distinction upon local deliberations, but that will not alter the general state of affairs. The state of affairs, you must expect as the general rule, is local control by petty local interests. A state of affairs that will certainly intensify in the years to come, unless some revision of areas can be contrived, that will overtake the amplifying interests of the delocalized section of the population. Let me point out what is probably the result of a dim recognition of this fact by the non-local population, and that is the extreme jealousy of rates and municipal trading by the less localized paying classes in the community. That is a question we socialists, believing as we do all of us at least in the abstract theory of municipalization, must particularly consider. The easy exasperation of the L1,000-a-year man at the rates, and his extreme patience under imperial taxation is incomprehensible, unless you recognize this fact of his delocalization. Then at once it becomes clear. He penetrates the pretenses of the system to a certain extent, and he is infuriated by the fact of taxation without representation, tempered by a mysteriously ineffective voting paper left at his door. I myself, as one of the delicalized class, will confess he has my sympathy. And those who believe in the idea of the ultimate municipalization of most large industries, will continue to find in this non-localized class, working especially through the medium of Parliament, a persistent and effective obstruction to all such projects, unless such a rectification of areas can be contrived as will overtake the delocalization and the diffusion of interests that has been and is still going on. I will confess that it seems to me that this opposition between the localized and the non-localized classes in the future, or to be more correct, the opposition between the man whose ideas and life lie in a small area and the man whose ideas and life lie in a great area, is likely to give us that dividing line in politics for which so many people are looking today. For this question of areas has its imperial as well as its local side. You have already seen the Liberal Party split upon the Transvaal question. You yourselves have, I am told, experienced some slight parallel tendency to fission, and it is interesting to note that this was, after all, only another aspect of this great question of areas, which I would now discuss in relation to municipal trading. The small communities are fighting for existence and their dear little ways. The synthetic great communities are fighting to come into existence and to absorb the small communities. And curiously enough, at our last meeting you heard Mr. Belloc, with delightful wit and subtlety, expounding the very antithesis of the conceptions I am presenting tonight. Mr. Belloc, who has evidently never read his Malthus, dreams of a beautiful little village community of peasant proprietors, each sticking like a barnacle to his own little bit of property, beautifully healthy and simple, and illiterate and Roman Catholic and local, local over the ears. I am afraid the stars in their courses fight against such pink and golden dreams. Every tramway, every new twopenny tube, every light railway, every improvement in your omnibus services, in your telephonic services, in your organization of credit, increases the proportion of your delocalized class, and sucks the ebbing life from your old communities into the veins of the new. Well, you may say, no doubt this is right so far as it goes. Existing local government areas do not represent real countries, but still these local government devices are of service for cutting up and distributing administrative work. But that is exactly what they are not. They are worse when you consider them in regard to function than when you consider them in regard to representation. Since our conceptions of what constitutes a local administrative area were developed, there has arisen the problems of water supply, and of organized sewage, of railways, tramways, and communications generally, and of lighting and telephonic intercourse. There hangs over us, though the average local authority has no eyes to see it, the necessity of adapting our roads to accommodate an increasing new traffic of soft-tired vehicles, and it is not improbable that heating by wholesale, either by gas or electricity, will presently be also possible and desirable. For all these things we need wide views, wide minds and wide areas, and still more do we want wide views for the business of education that is now also coming into the sphere of local administration. It happens that I have had an object lesson in this matter of local government, and indeed it is my object lesson that has led to this paper tonight. I live upon the boundary line of the Sanjay Urban District Board, a minute authority with a boundary line that appears to have been determined originally about 1850, by mapping out the wanderings of an intoxicated excursionist, and which the only word is interdigitates with the borough of Folkestone, the urban district of Cheriton, and the borough of Hythe. Each of these bodies is, by way of being a tramway authority, each is at liberty to secure powers to set up generating stations and supply electricity, each is a water authority, and each does its own little drainage, and the possibilities of friction and litigation are endless. The four places constitute an urban area greatly in need of organized intercommunication, but the four authorities have never been able to agree upon a scheme, and now Folkestone is concerning itself with the project of a little internal tramway system all of its very own. Sanjay has succumbed to the spell of the Southeastern Railway Company, and has come into line with a project that will necessitate a change of cars at the Folkestone boundary. Folkestone has conceded its electrical supply to a company, but Sanjay, on this issue, stands out gallantly for municipal trading, and proposes to lay down a plant, and set up a generating station all by itself to supply a population of 1,600 people, mostly indigent. In the meanwhile, Sanjay refuses its inhabitants the elementary convenience of the electric light, and when, quite inadvertently, I connected across the convolutions of the boundary with the Folkestone supply, my life was darkened by the threat of impossible litigation. But if Folkestone repudiates municipal enterprise in the matter of lighting, I gather it does not do so in the matter of telephones. And there has been talk of a neat little Folkestone telephonic system competing against the National Telephone Company, a compact little conversation of perhaps 100 people, rate sustained. And how is the non-local inhabitant to come into these things? The intelligent non-local inhabitant can only save his £2 or £3 of contribution to this folly, or that by putting in £20 or £30 worth of work in local politics. He has no local connections, no local influence, he hasn't a chance against the plumber. When the house I occupy was built, it was a mere interposition of providence that the drain did not go southward into a Folkestone sewer instead of northward into Sanjay. Heaven knows what would have happened if it had. I and my neighbors are by a special concession permitted to have water from the Folkestone source. By incessant vigilance we do, I believe, usually succeed in deducting the Folkestone water rate from the Sanjay general rate which covers water, but the wear and tear is enormous. However, these are details, dear to my heart, but the merest marginal comments to my argument. The essential fact is the impracticable silliness of these little divisions, the waste of men, the waste of nervous energy, the waste of administrative energy they involve. I am convinced that in the case of almost any public service in the Folkestone district with our present boundaries, the administrative waste will more than equal the profit of a private company with parliamentary powers overriding our local authorities. That if it is simply a choice between these little bodies and a company of the common type even, then in lighting, locomotion, and indeed in almost any general public service, I would say, give me the company. With companies one may hope to deal later, they will not stand in the way of developing saner areas, but an obstinate little authority clutching everything in its hands, and led by a clerk naturally interested in litigation, and who is also something of an expert in political organization, will be an altogether harder thing to supersede. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.